Chapter 31. No kind of victory. Sanguinius stood upon the fractured walls of Neocon City. He stood against a backdrop of 100 legionary banners and a mountainous city ablaze from peak to base. The hive burned from 10,000 places. Before the shattered bastions of the fortifications, the broken bodies of hundreds of god machines lay. They were so numerous they covered the ground, hiding the wind-scoured wasteland from sight. Leaking plasma reactors, still burning, sent out streamers of violently hued gases that changed colour as they cooled. Every now and then an explosion issued from the battlefield, as unfired munitions cooked off, or a reactor gave out completely, and in those cases there was also a flash of baleful false lightning that lit the dust and smoke from within. From Neocon City, too, came detonations, close enough to the surface to be heard, wrenching notes of metal tearing, and the thunder of avalanches as spires and halls collapsed. Where the anvil had struck the city's side, a vast hall, alight with the glow of molten metal, vented black smoke in endless amounts into the sky. It spread an oily cast across the world, blocking out the light from the sun. So it seemed that Neocon and its neighbours were trapped in a deep cave of smoke and flames. There was danger where Sanguinius stood atop the ramparts. The whole of the western plain was rucked up in a fresh impact crater, wide as a sea. His advisory engine seers told him he must get away from there, lest the hive come down in its entirety and bury him under its weight. Not even he, they implored, could survive that. He sent them away. "I do not die here today," he told them. He would not move, so nor did his men. His command cadre waited patiently, their red armour lit with orange highlights by the world of fire, while Sanguinius looked upon all he had done. Handfuls of loyalist titans stalked the scrap grounds, filling the heads of enemy machines that showed signs of life with sprays of bullets or misericord bursts of laslight. There were blood angels down there, around the Titan's feet, hunting escaped crewmen or offering aid to those loyal to the throne where they were found. There were precious few among the Titan crews left alive. Mostly they hunted, executing with murderous efficiency every traitor they came across. At the edge of the battlefield, the salvaging of the god engine's remains was already underway. Adeptus Mechanicus crawlers were set down by mighty lifters. Giant dome-backed machines sorted through the dead metal of once awesome engines of war, sifting scrap for what could be used again. A weapon here, a head there, a limb or armour plate. They crushed that which could not, sorted the materials internally, and poured them up long conveyor belts that stood proud of their sides into attendant foundry leviathans. Tainted air burned his Primarch's throat as he watched the spectacle of the cult Mechanicus's automated funeral. The machines were impressive, but what touched his soul were the lesser processions that wended their way between the dead, long trains of robed priests bearing banners and wailing sad music went from engine to engine, loyalist and traitor, to offer final benedictions to their extinguished souls. Such misery they exhibited. Sanguinius felt it on the air, his psyche's sensitivities leaving him open to it, and therefore he suffered a measure of what they suffered. The great angel was a noble being, and affected by the pains of others, even those of the cult Mechanicus. Although they forswore humanity for the sake of the machine, their sorrow was all too human, for all their protestations of disdain for emotion and all things of the flesh.
"I am become death, the destroyer of worlds," said Sanguinius softly.
"My lord," said Raldoron.
He was at the head of the Legion's chapter masters. Other heroes of note waited there, the sanguinary guard Ascalon and his comrade Amit, lord of the Flesh Terror's chapter, wise Amkani Kano of the Librarium, and others. A new voice answered, rich and powerful as Sanguinius's, a Primarch's voice, heavily accented and beautiful with foreign poetry.
It is a line from a text of an ancient religion that said all things are one, First Captain, that there is no beginning and no end.
Jagatai, you came, said Sanguinius.
It was a statement wearily delivered, without joy at reunion.
As soon as your request for aid was received, it appears I am too late.
It is I who was in error. The failure of this campaign is my guilt to bear.
You said yourself it was never meant to be won.
Jagatai Khan walked through the throng of Blood Angels, followed by a company of his own elite, their white armor lit ruddy by the fires consuming the hive. Sanguinius looked back upon the battlefield as his brother joined him.
The scriptures your father quotes from held that to each god in each of his many lives was given a part they were bound to play, said the Khan, continuing his explanation. These ancient Kushites said there was no life and death, that both were illusory. All is cyclical and never-ending. Their creed was at once cataclysmic and comforting.
It gives me no comfort, said Sanguinius. I look upon destruction such as this, and I no longer wish to play my part. In light of this, I wonder what I am for.
We are as we were made to be, said the Khan.
He said this as a fact, something to be accepted, like poor weather. I am no longer convinced of that, said Sanguinius. If the Emperor had known what we would become, he would have ordered our destruction before we were ever taken from him. You would think he would have known, when he gathered us to him. Two failures should have made him wary.
He turned away from the battlefield and the dead machines towards the wreck of Neocon City.
I have made of this place a pyre for hundreds of millions of innocents. And for what?
He gestured to the fallen titans and the giant rupture in the planet's crust.
To reduce infinitesimally the forces the War Master will bring to Terra to kill our father. There was no worth in this place other than as a miserable dwelling. Somewhere for generations to live and die in darkness and poverty before my father found the time to raise them up. Now it is not even that.
I'm sorry, Lord,
said Ascalon, falling to one knee. The knuckles of his bionic arm rested in the rubble of the wall.
The sons of Horus hid their intentions to the last. We had no warning they were going to destroy the anvil. Rise, my son, said Sanguinius. It is my error, not yours. Horus beat me without even setting eyes on me.
You should not blame yourself, as Ascalon should not, said the Khan.
Sanguinius fell silent. Firelight danced upon golden hair. Though clouds and smoke blotted out the sky, he could see the damage the fall of the cathedral had done. The pale non-light of the warp, visible to his psychic gifts, spread across the firmament. Although unheard by mortal ears, it let out a snarling howl that cut dead the messages of astro-telepathy. He, the Lion and Gilliman, had destroyed the ruin storm, so Horus had found another way to create the same effect. It was lesser, but it was well placed to aid him. Despair gripped Sanguinius. Perhaps his death at Horus's hands would do no good, and the galaxy would burn.
1,000 astropaths dead, he said. The warp unleashed upon the Garman cluster. Our communications destroyed, and our forces fragmented beyond redemption.
He looked deep into his brother's eyes, who frowned to see the suffering in them.
I am glad to see you, my brother. But I would fly a while to witness all the good I have done here, he said bitterly.
He spread his wings and stepped towards the precipice of the ruined parapet. His lords stood unsure of what to do.
Sanguinius's humours grew ever darker. "My lord," called Amit, "what are your orders? What should the legion do?" Sanguinius half turned his head, his feathers ruffled in the hot wind, poised upon the verge of flight. "Send orders to all companies to regroup. Inform every imperial force still contactable that they are to make all haste to the muster point. Our cause here is lost. This is no kind of victory." Sanguinius looked to his brother. "Jagatai?"
"You were vouched this command, great angel. My sword is yours to direct. The Ordu are ready to ride at your direction."
Sanguinius nodded slowly. His head was heavy with the burden, and it was a struggle to look up into the heavens, to the position the throne world occupied beyond the choking smog of war. He knew where it was instinctively. "Then we return to Terra." He stepped off the wall. Slow wing beats carried him into the sky, where the world spread itself beneath him and displayed its utter ruination.